couple of times back, I actually talked about, well, actually mentioned how we can eat and make ourselves sick and yet turn around and ask God to heal us. And then last time, I raised questions about, are we defiling the temple of the Holy Spirit by what we eat? All right. Well, this time, I wanted to pursue the subject of food, not only physical food, but food analogies from the Bible. The actual title of this message is Food for a Long Life. It actually has three sections. In the first section, I intended to talk about some fundamental dietary procedures or principles. Okay, I was actually going to tap into my wife's knowledge in the area. Sherry, as you know, is an ambassador graduate with a double major, one in which was home economics. And she's studied this stuff ever since then. I was going to use examples, you know, very fundamental examples about diet, you know, like reducing refined carbohydrates, like sugar and flour, and name particular produce that is heavily sprayed, and talk about antioxidants and probiotics, and some of the various names for sugar that they try to fool you with, codes on vegetables, the little barcode that tells you if it's organic or GMO. Do you know those little codes on there? I can tell you that. And we're talking about herbs like black elderberry and turmeric. But that's what I was going to do, all right? I'm not going to do that anymore. Okay. That didn't work out. All right. But a lot of this information, Sherry will be adding to our congregational reference book, and even in preparing what I am going to talk about, I pulled out some stuff that will look good in our reference book as well. What went wrong? Well, as I was researching, I came across the massive problem, all right, massive problem in our food chain that dwarfs everything else I was going to talk about. Okay, and that problem is GMO and GE foods. Analogies. Analogies like you're standing in the supermarket, you know, and you're reading the label on the package of whatever to see if it's healthy or not. When a tornado hits the front door, it's kind of a moot point, you know, what you were reading when this happens. Or you're on the beach, you know, having a picnic, and you're looking at your sandwich and say, I wonder if that's really organic lettuce in this sandwich. When there's a 50-foot tidal wave coming, you know, it doesn't really matter anymore. And the solution to the GMO problem generally covers everything else I would have talked about anyway. So, we're going to talk about GMO, and I will come to a solution. Nonetheless, for a while here, this is going to be quite depressing, all right? But take heart. The message does get better later on, and there is even a biblical slant to what I'm going to talk about. The information comes from a lot of research papers and stuff, but it was all funneled through material put out by Dr. Oz, Mercola, and Arnish. So if you don't like them, don't get turned off. Just listen to what they have to say. All right. GMO actually stands, as you know, for genetically modified organism. And GE is genetically engineered plants. Right. It actually involves splicing in a gene that changes the fundamental characteristic of the plant. All right. We're not going to get deep into that, so don't worry. All right. So you would assume that, you know, the chemical companies do this to make the plant better to eat. No, GMO plants are not as nutritious as organic plants. Rachel's shaking her head hard. Rachel, before you get to the end of this, you're going to have a headache, so be careful. 85% of GMO plants are designed to be herbicide tolerant. Herbicide's a weed killer. All right. These things are designed so you can repeatedly douse them with herbicide. Herbicide that would normally kill them. But we're going to make the plants tougher so we can dump lots of this stuff on there. And they're mainly made to be resistant to glyphosate, and that's the active ingredient in Monsanto's Roundup. And that's the main problem with GMO plants. You know, there are other problems, but the main problem with the plant is the herbicide that they dump on them, and mainly glyphosate. And we'll go into details on that shortly. It's not the only problem with GMO plants, though. They involve a novel protein. I like that term. You know, it's a novel protein, something weird that they developed in this plant. All right. So this novel protein is created in the GMO plants and can promote cancer and liver and kidney failure. GMO wheat potentially can alter human DNA. It can be deadly to children and cause serious illness in adults. These are deep subjects that we will not cover because we're going to concentrate on the herbicide side of this. All right, but if that wasn't bad enough, Dow Chemical is requesting approval for GE versions of corn and soybeans to designed to survive repeated use of 2,4-D. That's 2,4-D. You know what 2,4-D is? That's half of the agent in Agent Orange. Remember all the problems from Agent Orange in Vietnam, which is linked to cancer, Parkinson's, endocrine disruption, and reproductive problems. Okay. Dow is hyping Agent Orange, corn, and soy as solutions to resistant weeds, herbicide-resistant weeds. Okay. The reason the weeds are herbicide-resistant is because they're dumping more and more herbicides on them. So they're just going in a circle here. Some soy products create their own pesticide. Isn't that cool? This plant, you don't even have to spray it. You know, you don't have to dump anything on it. Some GE soy produces its own pesticide via the BT gene. Monsanto GM sweet corn contains the BT toxin. Works neat. It ruptures the stomach of any insect that feeds on it. And you want to eat something that blows up bugs, okay? Rats got organ failure when fed it. And a lot of this stuff is depressing. And the toxin has been detected in pregnant women. U.S. farmland, a very large percentage of U.S. farmland, is planted in GE soybeans, corn, and cotton. In the European Union, there is only one GE crop authorized to be used, and that's Monsanto's maize. We're overrunning it with it, but in Europe, only one has been approved, and it's not grown very much because of the health and environmental risk. Back to glyphosate. I always want to call it phosphate, but it's glyphosate. All right. You ever use Roundup? You know, you buy Roundup at the Lowe's and Home Depot and all those places. I use Roundup. It's pretty neat. You know, use it on the walkway and driveway when you get weeds, you know. Even other places. I mean, we won't talk about that. My wife is an organic gardener. But, so, anyway. But if you go out there with organic a weed killer herbicide and you dump it on, you know, the weeds, and in a week they look sick. All right. You dump non-systemic herbicides on plants, and in a week they die. All right. You put Roundup on there, go out the next day, and he is gone, man. Because it's systemic. It goes through the entire plant. You put it on a plant, and it just goes down in the roots and every cell in this thing, and it just the whole thing just is dead. Very effective and good stuff. All right. It's, like I say, it goes through, and if you put it on a plant, you're going to eat. You know, it goes through every cell of the plant, not just the surface. You cannot wash the stuff off. All right. Since I have time, I'm going to tell little stories all through this. Okay. This is a Libya story when I lived in Libya many years ago, and it's in North Africa. And I lived in a small company town, camp, on the Mediterranean, but in the middle of nowhere out between Tripoli and Benghazi. Well, there's a small town near that, a Libyan town, and they have a big open-air market there. And you go there, beautiful vegetables. I mean, they're in a desert, you know, dead-looking stuff. But beautiful vegetables out in the open market, you know, and you can go there and buy. So I was there one day, and there was this little boy, and he had one of these one-gallon rectangular metal cans. You know, you see they've all been replaced by plastic now, but this is one of the old metal cans, and he had the cap in his hand, and he would take the can, and he would fill up the cap with whatever liquid was in the can, and he would take the cap, and he would dump it on a head of lettuce, and he was working his way down these heads of lettuce. I don't know what was in that can, okay, but it was probably not good news to eat. Nonetheless, you could take that home, and if you worked on it, you could get it off the surface. You know, it would be good to eat again. Not so with glyphosate. It is going all through that plant, and there's no way you're going to get it off. Glyphosate is not just a herbicide, though. It was first patented as a mineral chelator that immobilizes nutrients so they are not available to the body. This stuff was originally made to block nutrients so they would not be available in your body. All right, but we're going to dump this on plants. All right? It causes mineral deficiencies. I mean, when you blocked it, you know, you can't absorb your minerals in your body. Mineral deficiencies can lead to developmental and mental health issues. But later on, glyphosate was patented as an antibiotic. Therein lies the heart of the problem with this thing. You have seen news stories, you know, problems with antibiotics, doctors over-prescribing the use of antibiotics. Now there's antibiotic-resistant viruses and this kind of stuff. So antibiotics are powerful. So when is food converted to what your body needs? Okay. Eat food. How does it get to be the nutrients that your body needs? You know, to build your body, to fuel your body, and all that kind of stuff. Well, it happens in the gut. That's the medical term for your intestines. All right. So, in your gut is where the food is converted and absorbed and used by your body. And there are good bacteria in your gut that provide access to minerals in the food and produce many vitamins that are needed for life. So that's where the good things are happening. There are good bacteria in there in your gut that helps take the good stuff out of the food, nourish your body. All right. Also, the good bacteria can fight Salmonella and E. coli. But, like all antibiotics, glyphosate kills off bacteria in the gut. All of them. Doesn't kill all of them, but it kills all the kinds. Okay. It kills the good as well as the bad. Okay. Matter of fact, it's more harmful to the good bacteria, and since the pathogenic bacteria, the bad stuff, are largely resistant to it. With the good bacteria gone, bad bacteria fill the void, and then the body is not getting the nutrients it needs. It's the same way the doctor provides antibiotics, you know, it just kills your intestine. You got to take probiotics or something, you know, try to replenish the bacteria that's in your gut. Otherwise, you know, your body is not getting the nutrients it needs, not getting some of the vitamins that are actually generated in the gut. Here's an interesting statistic. I come across a lot of interesting statistics. In the U.S., we normally have about 17,000 strains of bacteria in the gut. Not 17,000 bacteria, that's strains of bacteria in the gut. Native people in the Amazon jungle have about 30,000. We're not only killing off the good stuff, I mean, we've killed them off, you know, whole strains in mass that we do not have in our gut anymore. As kind of a side note, you run across little things that are of interest. Speaking of bacteria, you know how bees are dying off? What do they call that? Colony, something, you know, there's a destruction or something other like that. Bees are dying off. Okay. In examining the bees, you find out they're missing two of the bacteria that are essential components to their digestive system. Okay. Have you ever seen the news about the monarch butterflies where they go to Mexico or something down there to reproduce it? That their numbers are, what, down more than half now that are showing up down there? I wouldn't point fingers, but glyphosate kills bacteria, you know, that's used for digestive purposes. And I wonder if they got hold of the bees and the butterflies. There has been a rise of over 30 human diseases correlated with increased use of glyphosate and genetically engineered products. Medical profession now thinks there's actually an epidemic arising in the various diseases. Glyphosate can harm pituitary, thyroid, and reproductive hormones. Also, it can kill cells, kidney cells and the liver. Glyphosate is linked to, okay, these are diseases, and I put them in alphabetical order. ALS, allergies, Alzheimer's, autism, cancer, cardiovascular disease, depression, gluten intolerance, infertility, gastrointestinal diseases such as inflammatory bowel, leaky gut, diarrhea, colitis, Crohn's, multiple sclerosis, obesity, and Parkinson's. That'll wake you up. Which ones of those do you want? You know, they serve it along with the glyphosate. There's a quote by one of the researchers that I thought was good. He says, quote, probably most harmful chronic toxin ever encountered, unquote. Well, there's good news, I guess. You don't die immediately from glyphosate. The effect is delayed before you start suffering some of these diseases. Now, in an animal study, an independent animal study, by the way, health problems set in at 13 months, but it's more likely take longer, more years in humans. The presumption is if you start feeding a child GMO food at birth, the problems would actually set in when they're about 40 years old. So it takes time for it to accumulate. The good news, most of us may not live long enough to see the worst effects. The bad news, our children and grandchildren will. Actually, Roundup and fertilizers are blamed for tens of thousands of deaths among farmers in Sri Lanka, India, El Salvador, Nicaragua, and Costa Rica. However, Argentina is the poster child for GMO crops. They have massive cultivation of Roundup Ready soy in Argentina. And over the last 15 years, birth defects have risen in unison with the increase in soy plantations. Glyphosate is blamed for a dramatic increase in birth defects and cancer, and sterility and miscarriages. Some parts of Argentina, the primary cause of death of children under the age of one is birth defects. There's a particular village called Malvinas, and it's surrounded by soy plantations down there. In that village, the miscarriage rate is 100 times the national average of Argentina. Is there a correlation? Run across some statistics, and I'll just run through. They're kind of interesting. Soybeans are the second largest food crop in the U.S. More than 90% of it is GE. Soy is a staple of conventional livestock feed in confined feeding operations. And, of course, gets in the feed, it gets in the cow, and guess who it gets into next? Over 60% of vegetable oil consumed in the U.S. is from soy. Most goes into processed food and fast food preparation. 70% of processed foods contain GMO in the U.S. Herbicide-laced soy is in thousands of processed foods and in animal feed for livestock like pigs, cows, chickens, and turkeys. I like these with numbers like this one. GMO corn is 13 parts per million of glyphosate. Okay, that's GMO corn. Non-GMO corn is zero. Okay, that's 13 parts per million in GMO stuff. The EPA standard for glyphosate in American water is 0.7. You're getting 13 in your corn, although the standard for water is only 0.7, and in Europe, the standard is 0.2 parts per million. Glyphosate was found in breast milk of 30% of the U.S. women tested in a particular test, and which to these researchers shows that it does build up. It's bioaccumulative over time. The level in the breast milk was 1,600 times higher than the EU water standard. And some little kid is going to drink that. That's why I didn't nurse when I was a kid. Glyphosate is found in urine as well as U.S. and in the EU. In the U.S., it's 10 times higher than in the EU. On May 1st, the EPA doubled the amount of glyphosate allowed in food. Soybean oil is now allowed to have 40 parts per million. 0.1 part per million can kill good bacteria. Now, we're not even talking about the chemicals in drinking. We're only talking about food, and we're talking about herbicides, and we're not talking about drinking water where, you know, the glyphosate can drain off into our drinking water. The only reason I bring that up, because I saw an interesting study that listed the states by how dangerous their drinking water is, how polluted it was. I guess it was number three. North Carolina, you know, was number three as the most dangerous drinking water for all the contaminants in it. Now, I know some of you don't believe that. I even had to argue with somebody here to tell me how great their water is. But nonetheless, in this survey, it was number three. All right, I'll tell you more stories then. You know what suet is? It's perfect, right? It's a little cake of bird seed that's kind of stuck together with peanut butter or something, you know, and you put it in a little cage and you hang it in the tree and the birds come and eat it. My wife has three of those in the backyard. You should see the birds in our backyard. You don't believe, you know, they're there all the time. You know, I can tell you good bird stories, but okay, the birds are there all the time. Nonetheless, but there's some of these little green inchworms were eating on the tree there, a maple tree we have in the backyard, you know, and it's kind of little green worms that if you disturb them, they drop down like on a single spider web thread, you know, they drop down. Okay, so anyway, they were eating on the tree, so I sprayed the tree, away from my wife's organic garden. Okay, I'll make that clear. I sprayed this tree with a mild dose of a pesticide. Okay, to get rid of these worms. They started dropping down on their little threads like paratroopers coming out of a plane, man, when they did that. Now, the moral of this story is I forgot to move the suet that was under the tree, so some of the spray got on the suet. Okay. But I took it to the hydrant, and I washed it off really good. Like, I mean, I did. I washed it off really good, and I put it back. Well, the birds show back up the next day, and they sit in the tree that I sprayed, but they are not going to eat that suet. And they did not, even though I had washed it off really good. They'll sit in the tree that I sprayed, but they're not going to eat the stuff, you know. But they will eat the stuff, but they won't eat that stuff. Supposedly, animals will not eat GMO feed if they're given a choice, supposedly. You know, this kind of reminds you of the phrase from Hosea 4:6. My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. In this case, well, it's lack of knowledge, but it's also considerable greed that's going on. All right, that's the bad news. Okay. But how do we defend ourselves against GMO and GE foods? Okay, we're not going to change industry. We're not going to change, you know, the U.S.'s food supply. We're not going to fight the chemical companies. So how do we protect ourselves? We don't really need to know the science. Okay, like I say, I don't want to get any deeper here than I have to. You don't need to be a GMO, GE expert. In fact, you can't do better than God. So let's look at Genesis 1. It's real easy. It's right up front. Verse 12. That's even on the first page. And the earth brought forth grass, the herb that yields seed according to its kind, and the tree that yields fruit, whose seed is in itself according to its kind, and God saw that it was good. Oh, that's the phrase. And God saw that it was good. Look at Genesis 21. So God created great sea creatures and every living thing that moves, with which the waters abounded according to their kind, and every winged bird according to its kind. Oh, here's this phrase here. And God saw that it was good. Verse 25. And God made the beast of the earth according to its kind, cattle according to its kind, and everything that creeps on the earth according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. Back then, it was good. All right? That's the way we started. And you think about it. All right. What if Adam and God were walking through the Garden of Eden, you know? I mean, not only was the earth good, but imagine how good the garden was that God planted there for Adam and Eve. So Adam and God are walking through the Garden of Eden, you know. And God points over and says, okay, now, see this lettuce? That is really good to eat. But before you eat it, you really got to dump herbicide on it. All right? And he's walking along, you know, saying, now, see this corn? Now, that is really good stuff. Okay. But make sure you put pesticide on this stuff before you eat it, you know. And a cow walks across there, and God says, and you can drink milk from that cow, but make sure you almost bring it to a boil so you kill everything in it before you drink it. No, that's not the way it was, all right. God's way, oh, well, God said it was good. And the garden had to be even better than that, you know. But we're at the opposite extreme now. If we know it's bad now, then go back to when it was good. Go back to the beginning, to the creation beginning, before herbicides, GMOs, and GEs. And you can get closer to that than you might actually think right off the bat. Here's another story. This is a great millennial-type story. There is an natural organic dairy, like 15 minutes from our house in South Carolina. It's called Happy Cow Dairy. And cows look happy. And their milk is sold in more organic-oriented type supermarkets and stuff like that, because it's an organic dairy. All right, we had never been there. All right, and this was like 3 weeks ago, and we finally wanted to go. So Mr. and Mrs. Gibb and Sherry and I, we got together and we went to the Happy Cow Dairy, you know. And it's neat. I mean, looks like big sheet metal buildings, you know, it's a dairy. But, you know, nonetheless, you bought that beautiful green pastures there that the cows graze in, you know, and they get organic feed to boost that. And have a little store in there with, you know, all the milk and some cheeses they get from up north. It's all organic and stuff and this kind of thing. It was a beautiful day, too. So it was a really millennial outing to go to this thing and see an operation that would be done pretty well like God would do it. We were in there in the little store. I mean, it's a really crowded little store. You know, just two aisles you can go around this thing. And the old guy who was the owner of the dairy was there. And I asked him a question, and he launched off. And told me all about answered the question, and all about the dairy and how he's converted over and how he was about to go out of business, and then he went organic, and now the cows saved him, and his milk production went way up when he went organic, all this kind of stuff, and it went on for like 10 minutes, and I said, oh, why don't you tell my wife about that, you know, so I could move on. And so he talked to Sherry for a long time, too. All right. But in this conversation, Sherry says she is lactose intolerant. Okay. And the guy said, were you born lactose intolerant? And Sherry says, no. I became lactose intolerant when I was carrying my first child, and I drank a lot of milk. And the guy says, well, you're not lactose intolerant. And he says, it's the milk. He says, we heat our milk, if I remember the number, to 145 degrees, and that kills the bad stuff. And that's it. Big-scale commercial dairies heat their stuff like 194 degrees. Kills everything, including the good enzyme that's in the milk that helps you digest milk. And he said, he bet Sherry she could drink his milk. She wouldn't have any problem. She's been drinking his milk for 3 weeks with no problems. You know, after all these years of being lactose intolerant. So we can get closer to God's way of doing things in this society still than we think. Lactose intolerance is usually associated with pasteurized milk. And why do commercial dairies pasteurize it at such high temperature? Because the cows are sick, all right? And that's why they have to make sure they kill the bad stuff that is in there. How do we protect ourselves from GMO foods? We can't read the labels. GMO labeling is required in Europe. Here it is vehemently fought by the chemical companies and food producers, including, and this is what gets depressing when you see some of these companies. These two companies are fighting GMO labeling, so you won't know what's in their stuff. Gerber and Similac, baby food companies. Even some companies with organic in their name are fighting the GMO labeling standard. All right. How do we protect ourselves from the ravages and the diseases of GMO foods? Two kinds of food. That's kind of a humorous play on words here. Two kinds of food. Organic and natural. All right. That was God's way. Close as you can get to it, that's how we protect ourselves. That's why I said at the beginning, you know, if this is the solution to GMO and you follow the solution, pretty well takes care of all those other things you would have talked about too, if you can eat organic and natural. You look for an organic in fruits and vegetables. You look for the 100%, the USDA 100% organic label. That means there's no GMOs. in organic fruits and vegetables. When it comes to beef, it's called natural. Organic applies to plants. Natural applies to beef. And that should be grass-fed or pastured meat that is not fed GE feed. And grass-fed beef is obviously healthier than GMO-fed beef. Higher levels of vitamins and nutrients in them. Actually, cattle would normally eat grass. Feedlots use GMO feeds, growth-promoting drugs, and antibiotics. When growth promoters, drugs, are used in U.S. beef, that is used in U.S. beef, is banned in most other countries of the world due to health effects in animals and consumers. Okay, chickens, that was beef. You got to look for grass-fed natural beef. Chicken should be free-range types, If you put them in the, bind them all together in little cages and stuff, they're going to get sick. All right, then you have to give them antibiotics. Then the antibiotics kill your good bacteria, and then, it kills you eventually. Eggs should be from free-range pasture. They call them pasture-raised chickens, if at all possible. Fish, don't even get started on fish. Farm-raised fish, just ripe with diseases. They just dump of antibiotics on them. Salmon fish farms in some rivers are so polluted that they've killed off the natural fish, and they have to close down salmon fish farms because they're killing the river. So it has to be ocean-caught fish. And of course, you eat processed food. What's it going to be in processed food? I mean, Garden of Eden, there weren't many processed foods, So the more you can get away from it, the better you are. Eating out, give me a break. If you eat out, you're almost guaranteed to get GMO. If it's a cheap fast food place, they're not going to make any money by buying organic stuff and giving it to you. And you think about it, even if you go to an upscale restaurant, how do they fatten that steak that you're eating, They did that in a feedlot with GMO feed. Okay, I do realize there can be cost and availability issues with organic and natural food. All right. But I'm trying to get to the fundamental answer, okay? Not trying to apply it in this difficult world. If nothing else, at least try to replace the good bacteria that is killed off by GMO foods via probiotics, such as yogurt and fermented vegetables and kombucha and supplements if necessary. And if you don't understand all that, ask Sherry. She understands all that stuff. And in the bottom line, God can heal if all else fails. Sherry made a good point in our house. When you say a blessing at the meal and you thank God for the food, you also should ask Him to protect you from the food, nourish your body from the food, in spite of what might be in the food. Some people might disagree with all this and say, well, that's going too far, and they don't believe all this. Okay, I am biased. I'll admit that, right? Here's the bias. I believe God can create better food than man can. That's one. And in the end time, Satan, via man, will destroy everything, including our food supply. All right. That's only part one, and we're moving along here, man. Good thing this wasn't a split sermon. John Dean would have been in trouble. All right. Let's move on to this. I'll tell you a story. Who knows who Michael Mosley is? He's on TV, okay? He's an Englishman. He studied to be a doctor. And he produces shows that are medically oriented, about various subjects. You see them on PBS, all right? He did one on extending your life, seeing if you can make life longer, all right? And he visited this guy in England. who had been on a low-calorie diet for 20 years. The guy, the longest duration anyone's known of to be on a low-calorie diet. And because a low-calorie diet is healthy for you. Okay. Now, Michael Moseley and this guy were both 51 years old. Their birthdays were like a month apart. Let me tell you, they did not look the same. This guy on the low-calorie, healthy, massive salad-eating diet, he looked really good, let me tell you. So they went to see a cosmetic surgeon, and they asked, and Michael Moseley asked the cosmetic surgeon, you know, how old do you think each of us are? And he looked at Michael and says, 50. He's really 51. He looked at the other guy and he said, 35. And they said, no, we're the same age. And the doctors, I don't believe it. 15 years difference, you know, through food, through diet of what he was eating. Now, but when they checked the telomeres of the two of them, you don't know what telomeres are, but I'll tell you in a minute, okay? When they checked the telomeres between the two of them, Michael Moseley's telomeres were actually longer than the other guy. And telomeres determine how long you're going to live. So Michael was actually, even though this other guy looked great, you know, ate great, but he's still liable to die before Michael Moseley will. All right. So if you think about food, start at position zero. Food can shorten your life. Boy, you eat that stuff we just talked about. That can shorten your life through disease and whatever. Food will not necessarily lengthen your life, at least not by much, because that's where we're going to talk about telomeres. Telomeres are the strands of protective DNA that cap the tips of chromosomes within a cell. If you didn't follow that, it really doesn't matter. It's the result that we're looking at. Okay. Telomeres shorten and fray over time and with each cell division. Okay, they're there. You know, that's how long your life's going to be. And over time and wear and tear and cell division, they get shorter and shorter. Okay, you can judge the rate of aging and life expectancy from the length of telomeres. The longer they are, the longer you have. Longer means stem cells can repair damage. It makes you look younger. When no telomeres are left, the DNA starts to fray and cells no longer divide. You see the results, like weakness and frailty and memory age and, you know, memory loss and just age problems, and you're near the end. Okay. Besides time and cell division, stress causes damage to telomeres. That can shorten one's life. Stress in and of itself can aggravate problems like this. Can cause or aggravate them, actually. Heart disease, stroke, cancer, high blood pressure, tension, headaches, obesity, irritable bowel problems, cholesterol abnormalities, elevated blood sugar, diabetes, fatty liver, artery aging, osteoporosis, impairs memory, slows digestive functions, can cause depression. Okay. Actual clinical depression. 2 years of actual clinical depression can shorten your life 7 to 10 years. All right. But lifestyle changes may even lengthen telomeres. Definitely will make them not fray and shorten as quickly, but it may even lengthen them. Lifestyle changes. Exercise. Weight as well as aerobic exercise. Eat colorful fruits and vegetables that fight free radicals. Eat less. That's the calorie reduction stuff. Can reduce risk of diabetes, cancer, and heart disease. Emotional health. Stay in touch with people that are dear to you. Oh, like these people. We're here today. All right. There is scriptural food that should lengthen our telomeres. Galatians 5. Look at Galatians 5, verse 22 and 23. Let me get in Galatians 5, verses 22 and 3. But the fruit of the Spirit, okay, food, here we go. But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Against such there is no law. Wait a minute. Sounds like anti-stress food to me. Love and joy and peace. And, you know, even love, that's the emotional health part of this, you know. So actually God's way, you know, you can eat God's way of life, you know, you can eat God's way, and that will definitely, you know, prevent disease and help you feel a lot better. But the spiritual food as well can actually help you have a longer life. It's low-stress way of life. Living God's way can actually lengthen our lives. Just a couple of other scriptures. Matthew 11. Matthew 11, verse 28. Come to me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. Well, if we relied on God, isn't that a real stress reliever? Luke 12. Luke 12, verse 22. Then he said to his disciples, therefore I say to you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat, nor about the body that you will put on. Life is more than food, and the body is more than clothing. Consider the ravens. By the way, this is about emotional well-being and relying on God. This is not about food, okay? These ravens don't worry about anything, but they still will not eat the suet. That's poison with pesticide, okay? Consider the ravens, for they neither sow nor reap, which have neither storehouse nor barn, and God feeds them. Oh, how much more value are you than the birds? And which of you, by worrying, can add one cubit to his stature? If you then are not able to do the least, why are you anxious for the rest? Consider the lilies of the field, how they grow. They neither toil nor spin. And yet I say to you, even Solomon in all his glory was not arrayed like one of them. And when God so clothes the grass, which today is in the field and tomorrow is thrown into the oven, how much more will he clothe you, O you of little faith? And do not seek what you should eat or what you should drink, nor have an anxious mind. For all these things the nations of the world seek after, and your Father knows that you need these things. But seek the kingdom of God, and all these things shall be added to you. Do not fear, little flock, for it is your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. If we know that's where it ends, in the kingdom, you know, why stress over this life and this world? In the end, we will be given a place in the kingdom. That knowledge should reduce stress and lengthen telomeres. And that's the first two parts of the message. The third part is much shorter because you know it. You hear about it all the time. And we're talking about food for long life. Physical food will not substantially extend your life. Techniques to slow the decay of telomeres will only postpone death. We will still die. But there are scriptures that talk about another kind of food that can give really long life. Let's just look at John 6:47. Luke 6:47. Most assuredly I say to you, he who believes in me has everlasting life. Whoa, that's a long life. All right. I am the bread of life. Your fathers ate the manna in the wilderness and are dead. This is the bread which comes down from heaven, that one may eat of it and not die. I am the living bread which came down from heaven. If anyone eats of this bread, he will live forever. And the bread that I shall give is my flesh, which I will give for the life of the world. Now that's what I call extending your life. We are offered food that gives eternal life. In fact, we are first fruits, play on word there, to partake of that food. And I will not dwell on this subject, this area, because that's what we talk about all of the time. Conclusion. We reviewed the most dangerous threat to the food supply that I see today, GMO and GE foods. We saw how we can protect ourselves from them by eating God's way, eating organic and natural food. We looked at the fruit of the Spirit and stress and how living God's way can actually lengthen our lives. And briefly, we considered the ultimate food for long life, the body and blood of our Savior, Jesus Christ, the bread of life that gives eternal life.